Hey everyone, I'm Alicia Harris.
Hi, I'm Charlie Yvonne Simpson.
Hey everyone, it's Miranda Heyman.
Hey, I'm Whitney White, and you're listening to the Call and Response Podcast.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And y'all, we made it through Halloween, and while I'm ready for Christmas music, I know some people may start to miss Halloween. And I get it, because even though I'm a scaredy cat, I do love Halloween, and I think it's because I really like magic. Like, I don't know if y'all remember that TV show / commercial that was on the Disney Channel where the guy taught us magic tricks. I loved it so much that Mama Fitz ended up buying me my own magic kit. And I recently got to see Darren Brown's Secret on Broadway. And he's technically not a magician, he's an illusionist, but what he does feels like magic. Like, I loved it so much the first time I saw it, I made another group of friends go with me a second time. It's wild. It's brilliant. And I guess Gold Star magically knew this because it was one of my recommended events of the week. Now, I may go see it a third time, but y'all seriously should just go experience it for yourself. Get the affordable tickets from Gold Star. It is bananas, y'all. But as y'all know, that is just the beginning with Gold Star. They provide affordable tickets to theater, comedy show, concerts, and so much more. So download Gold Star and let's make some memories, y'all. And I know, every week I'm like, oh, I'm so hype, I'm so thrilled, I'm so excited. And I, you know what? I am this week too, and I'm not going to be ashamed about that. I am so hyped. I'm so thrilled. I'm so excited to introduce this week's guest. I know you've seen her work around. She was the director of What to Send Up When It Goes Down, Our Dear Dead Drug Lord.
That's it.
I was like, so many
D's. That was it. I know, that was it.
And for all the women who thought they were mad, she's a gal about town. She's doing the damn thing. She's a director, she's a creator, and a musician. She's everything, y'all. She's doing it. It is Whitney White.
Hey! What's up? I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. And that's why I'm like, everyone, you've gotten shout outs from so many people. Like, Charlie Yvonne Simpson shouted you out, Alicia Harris. Like, everyone loves you. And so when I was like, I finally get to meet her, what? I was like, so thrilled.
Oh, I love those women. Shout out to them.
Shout out to y'all. We love you, podcast alums. You got it going on. But let's start at the very beginning. I want to know how you got in performing arts.
Okay. It was a little gateway drug called music that did it for me.
Yes.
I was like singing from an early age. And my mother tried to get me to do everything else, but I just couldn't help it. And I remember I went to a Catholic school, predominantly white school on the north side of Chicago.
Ah.
And I was like the only chocolate drop in the choir. Mm-hmm. And I got all the solos because mm-hmm. I could sing better than everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, amen, amen.
I really, really did have a passion for music, particularly singing.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough in high school to study voice, and that got me into musical theater, which opened the door for theater later on at Northwestern. So
gotcha.
I started just making music as a little child, and then at Northwestern is where I really got my first taste of theater making, but
right.
as an actor. So all this is to say is I started out as a performer, and it really wasn't until I went to graduate school at Brown that I began to direct, and that changed my life. I was a first year MFA student at Brown, and I had an incredible group of teachers who saw that I had a voice.
Mm-hmm.
I was like always on stage thinking about everything except for my part, like the lights and the story and the world and all this stuff, and my mind just wasn't fully engaged.
Mm.
And I had a teacher's name's Brian Murtis, and he was like, you should direct. And he like charged me to write my own adaptation of Hedda Gabler. So I like wrote this dope. I thought it was dope. I thought it was pretty dope. This 8-person diverse cast adaptation of Hedda Gabler with original music.
Mm-hmm.
And I directed that my second year of grad school, and it just changed my life. Like my whole mind. I feel like all of my skills just came together in a nice, harmonious way. And I was like, well, I'm going to try and do this.
That was like the catalyst.
That
so
was
to speak.
The moment. Yeah.
Well, so I'm curious too, like going to Brown, Northwestern, you even said your Catholic school growing up, like these predominantly white institutions.
Correct. talk to me about it.
Yeah. Well, talk to me about it. Like, I want to know, did you feel like you had to code switch all the time, or did you? I mean, just I think
code switching becomes a natural way of life when you are truly a minority in an education system or in the educational system, particularly private schools and private schooling, because it's a westernized institution that's totally predicated on a particular way of speaking, walking, talking, and behaving.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you learn those codes and you do learn how to do that, but nothing comes without a price. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, like, that moment. I always think of The Matrix. I'm such a sci-fi geek. But, like, when I woke up, I was like, what is going on? Like, who am I trying to be right now for who? I remember that moment. And I also remember having that moment in my career, because I think that, you know, I was a young African-American female from Chicago who could sing, kind of dance. And the first thing they're like, just go be in a musical. Be the token black girl in every musical. I was in Rent. I was in Hair. I was in all those shows that you could be in. And I'm like, is that it? That's all you're supposed to do? You're supposed to shuck and jive? This is still a thing. And I remember, because I had a really robust acting career. I really loved a lot of it. And I did that for several years before I pursued my MFA. And I just kept thinking to myself, I was like, this can't be it. Like, you know, I would get the token black girl role in a musical, and then, like, the roles I would go out for on TV were, like, the ghetto girlfriend or the stripper or the skanky girlfriend or, like, the mom who's in the hospital with a gun, you know what I mean? And, like, just the daily breakdowns, which I'm sad to say hasn't changed that much, because Americans, we love procedural TV, and that just leads to certain storylines and stereotypes. But no tea, no shade. But, you know, I remember reading those breakdowns, and I was on my first TV show, and I'm like, is this all I'm supposed to do? I have all these ideas. I speak two languages. I'm really interested in politics. I'm really interested in music. There's got to be more I can do. And then also the plays that were getting produced, none of them reflected the world or people I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Not even the white people I knew. I'm like, who's making these plays? I don't know anybody like this. So I was like, there's got to be a way to reflect my understanding of existence, or at least to interrogate the questions I'm curious about through theater or through the performative arts. And I just had no idea what to do with myself. And, you know, for all this talk about code switching and the kind of inevitable toll that being a minority in a predominantly white institutional system does to you, I have had mentors along the way on the flip side who have been very instrumental in me stepping out into these new areas of writing and directing and composing music.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting. It clearly wasn't all bad, and I learned a lot, and I love mentoring young women and people of color who are curious about higher education or just how to change their fields, because, you know, every actor has the potential to act and do more than that. I believe that. And I really think that, like, people of color need to be making their own stories.
Yes.
On all levels. And that's the end of my preaching for the day, kids.
I loved it. Continue on. No, I was just curious about that, too. Like you said, mentors. And who were some of the artistic inspirations or influences you did find during this time? Mm-hmm.
Well, I keep giving him the shut up, but, you know, I was incredibly moved by this man I met, him and his wife, Brian Mertes and Melissa Keeveman. They're in the directing program at Brown Trinity, and I just feel like they accepted my crazy on every level, and they're like, put into the work, put into the work, try it, get it out, get it out. And I felt incredibly encouraged to make every experience I'd had from growing up with a fierce, fierce single parent mother, single mother in Chicago, to trying to get into these schools, trying to make it, you know, my perspectives on the world. And they're like, just put it into the work. So, I mean, I think the whole faculty at Brown Trinity, it's not a perfect place, but they saw me for who I am and they encouraged me to put that into the work.
Totally.
And now I totally, that's totally a part of my practice. It's like, I'm just coming from where I'm at.
Right.
My playmaking.
Well, that's, I was curious about that too, in terms of these different identities, I suppose, artistic identities, of musician, actor, writer, director. How do you see them informing each other?
Well, I think having started as a performer, particularly a black female performer, I'm very grateful that that's how I came to the business. It humbled me. I went through a lot of racially tense situations. I learned how to navigate that fast. I also developed just a love of other people, like being in a tribe, you know? And so now as a director, I feel like a very person-friendly director, because,
yeah,
like, nothing happens without them.
Yeah.
I've had the great fortune of working with some really, really, really dope artists of color, and artists of all kinds in the past 2 years, which I'm really grateful for. But I think starting as a performer just makes me human-friendly.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
I've been there. I was in those bad shoes. I've been electrocuted on stage. Like, I've
had
so
much. What?
Yes, yes, yes. I've had so much crazy stuff happen. It makes me, like, really able to, like, empathize with how hard it is out here for these performers.
No kidding.
Yeah. Electrocuted
on stage.
Oh, my God. Girl.
Who do we write to about this? I mean, I think that is a really important perspective to bring as a director. And in knowing all of the different parts of how a show comes together, how do you find... how do you develop, you know, a collaborative relationship with your playwright, with your actors, designers?
Yo, these playwrights are dope. I mean, I feel so honored that some of these women gave me a shout out, like you said, like,
yes,
Alicia Harris and Charlie and Tori and,
mm-hmm,
Jeremy and Keele and James. It's like, there's so many incredible writers right now,
mm-hmm,
who are doing exactly what I wanted maybe 10 years ago as an actor.
I see.
Who are, like, really looking around and up and down, smelling what's going on, thinking about it, and, like, barfing it up in this,
yeah,
brilliant way, like,
yeah,
this really aggressive, brilliant contemporary way that's, like, really loud and bold. And so I feel like, you know, I'm very humbled by them. And when we're collaborating, I just try and just tell them honestly how I hear their play.
Mm.
You asked me how the other aspects of my kind of artistic practice informed directing, and it's like, music informs it huge, because every play is like a score to me. It has a rhythm,
huh,
it has beats, it has a vibe, it has tone, it has arias or longer sections where people are doing monologues and kind of singing, and it has,
yeah,
like jazz sections that are going like fast dialogue. So I feel,
wow,
like I just try and talk to my writers like, yo, this is how I'm hearing it, and this is how I think we could breathe it to life. Like, everything is rhythm. Oh my God,
yeah,
I sound so cheesy, y'all, but
no,
that's
like,
how I approach it.
No, are you kidding me? I'm like, you need to teach a class that I will come audit? Are you kidding?
Oh my God, like, that word audit just triggered me. Oh my God, I just remember being at Northwestern like, hi, I'm not a real theater major, but I'm really talented, I swear. The powers that be won't let me in. Can I audit your class? Like, a lot of my, you asked me how I got here, a lot of it was that, because people,
mm-hmm,
do say no to you. And I think especially if you're a young Black performer, if you're not hitting those stereotypes, if you're not the loud,
mm-hmm,
brassy Black girl or the sassy gay best friend,
mm-hmm,
or the like hot and tot, rootin' tootin', like, chick, like, if you're not in these typical stereotypes, it's still very hard, particularly in musical theater, for these young performers to just, like, break out. And I remember that. So, yes,
wow,
audit. Woo, triggered.
Took her back. Yes, that's true, though. There is a lot of no.
Yeah, there's a lot of no.
How was, what, I don't even know what to ask. Like, what transitioning to your first year to New York City.
Oh, snap.
Tell us about the no's.
Child. No, those no's, I mean, I get a no, at least 5 no's every single day. And I guess what I'd say is, like, rejection, and you can coin it a different word, you know, an opportunity that you're not able to take, let's say, happens all the time, and it's not any kind of measurement of your talent or who you are. You just have to go through a different window. But that first year in New York, oh Lord, I think I moved to New York with like $200 and like 12 cents in my bank account. Stayed on my friend's couch for like weeks. It was a journey. But I remember artistically, like, the first place that kind of said yes to me was Ars Nova.
Okay.
I'd written this weird rock musical. I was very inspired by Passing Strange.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to that show.
Shout out to Passing
Shout
Strange.
Out to that show for being the revolutionary piece of work that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what I like to call, like, contemporary Black thought, you know? Anyways.
Yeah.
So fresh.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, I still am, like, trying to write my own Passing Strange.
Okay.
Like, so the first musical or concert play I call them I ever wrote was this thing called Lover, I'll Bring You Back to Life.
Yes.
It was about an unnamed Black girl living in the city who was trying to resurrect her dead lover with Vodun.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I'm half Jamaican, so I'm very into transatlantic Black religion and ritual.
Okay.
Anyways, and I sent my little application to Ant Fest. at Ars Nova, and that was the first place that was like, okay, here's a couple hundred bucks, go do your thing, like, welcome to the festival.
Yes.
And that was groundbreaking. And then after that, I had the good fortune of meeting Sam Gold, and I started assisting directing him.
Gotcha.
So those were the two things in that first year that helped me. But besides that, just like meeting these people, these dope Black writers and queer writers and POC writers, like us buying each other coffee and dinner and talking and scheming and keeping hope alive.
Yeah.
Because like it was a lot. It's still a lot of no's. Every day is a no.
See,
you know?
But I love that you say that only because, and I have put you on a pedestal just knowing your work too, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have too, because you are doing such great work. But to hear that someone who has had as much success as you have can also hear no is like, it's relieving in a way, I guess, for us peasants. Do you know what I'm saying?
I mean, we're all, I mean, it's like, you're not a peasant, but we are, you know, are all kind of party to this system that prioritizes certain points of views over other points of views. And sometimes we're on the other end of that. And so it's just like finding your community.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That is what keeps me hopeful and going, to be honest. That's the wonderful thing about New York is, like, you can find your community. Like,
that's true. It makes it, quote, easier to be here. Like, having that community.
Right, in theory. That's what I'm telling myself anyway.
Well, I guess it makes it, like, because the thing is about New York, even though there's so many people, it can feel so lonely.
So lonely.
If you don't have a community.
Especially artistically. And especially as a director. I mean, one of these big secret kind of initiatives or kind of goals I have is to just build community among other female directors. Because directing is an extremely lonely job, especially for a woman of color. There's like, what, how many of us?
Right.
It's growing. But meeting people like Liliana Blaine Cruz and Awoye, you know, these fierce women, Tabi Magar, who are like really happening, making their work happen, rather. I feel like they have boistered me in so many times when I thought that, you know, I couldn't do it. Or I got that one no from the big fancy theater. And I was like, well, that's it. It's impossible to be a Black female director. And building this community of women who are like, keep going, keep going. You just have to keep going.
It's I don't know if stressful is the right word. It's like overwhelming, though, I'd imagine.
But it's also like I'm an Aries and I'm Jamaican. So like, don't back me up against a corner because I'll find a way out. even though it can be discouraging, it's like it's also a good fight. And it's like one I'm willing to have. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. When I loved your artistic statement that I found on your website.
Oh, my God.
You and Miranda Haymon have the best artistic statement.
Shout out to Miranda.
Shout out. Because you talked about collaborative theater making. You talked about how you want to tell stories that are centered on Blackness, on womanhood. And there's another one I'm forgetting because I'm awful. What's the third one?
No, it's okay. I mean, collaboration is like the core. And of course, womanhood, but also just visceral images.
Visceral images.
Like,
I love that.
That sounds, God, I sound so theatery.
No, I love that.
Put me in a coffin.
I love
visceral
it.
Visceral images. No, but like the key is collaboration because, you know, directing is cute and all. You sit at home and you read your little plays and I'm like, ooh, I found the rhythm of this play. But what does that really mean? Like, you can't do anything without a team. And we are living in a time where these designers are making the work happen. So I view my process of directing as extremely collaborative. My lights and sound, especially sound.
Yes.
All the very patient sound designers I've worked with. I love you guys. Don't abandon me. Oh my God. But and costumes and scenic and lighting, these people are world building. They're world building. And it's so exciting to just start as early as you can and just start dreaming up that world, especially on these Black plays. And like, what does it look like? What does it smell like? What's going down? How do people sound? So I feel like that's the first kind of like cornerstone of what I love to do. And then also like just women. Like, I grew up in a family of fierce Black women, my mom, my aunts, my cousin. And every time I look around, I see their story in the world. Chekhov can be their story. Shakespeare can be their story. And contemporary plays also can be their story. So it's like, I see Black women everywhere. I mean, you can't go out into the world without seeing one. So why am I turning on a television and I'm not seeing them sometimes? I'm like, this is a joke.
Yeah.
So I think that I love stories that in which a woman is really dealing with obstacles. Okay. And whether or not she's a hero or the villain, I do not care. I think it's really exciting, these stories that are being written that are dangerous and not neat. I don't need my female characters to be likable.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't need the black women to be moms or aunties or motherly all the time. They can be violent. They can be dangerous. They can be sexy. They can have real desires. So, yeah.
Like multidimensionality.
Yeah. Like,
for sure.
In a real way. So I'm loving these stories that I'm reading about women in which they're just like having to monster the world.
Monster.
You know, they're
the
having
world.
To just really, really come at the world with some teeth. That's really exciting.
Yeah. So is that when you're reading a script, is that what you're looking for?
I don't know.
Messy women, or like, I mean,
I'm just looking for rhythm. Sorry.
That's it. I swear,
I'm giving
away
all my secrets, but I'm just looking for, like, you know, when you listen to your favorite, okay, you know, you like when you make a playlist and you're like, yo, this is my playlist. Like,
yes.
My shower playlist,
yes.
My cooking playlist.
Brunch. Yeah.
So I love the idea that you make a playlist with a specific intention and you go back to listening to that playlist. Why? Because you know it's going to do something to you.
Ooh.
Or for you. And so when I read a play, I look for, it depends on where I am in my life. If I'm in a real angry vibe, Whitney White period, like I'm going to look to a look for a play that's going to make my heart beat with that angry rhythm. If I'm missing my family, I'm looking for something else. But I feel like I'm just looking and listening to these plays with how they make me feel, the way that music can make me feel.
Yeah.
Also, like, music is just so dope. Like, I can get my friend to go see a random festival with me for $80, but, like, I can barely get them to go see a play for free. And there's a reason. Like, concerts are really... Music and concerts are really refreshing. So I'm always trying to make my theater more like a concert experience.
Okay.
Because people actually want to go to that.
Right. And spend money on that. I feel like they always talk about affordable tickets for people of color, like all this coded language. But it's like, no, there's money to be spent. They're just not spending it here.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
correct.
They're not enough pay for your
We
bag.
Live in America. You have to spend money here every time you go outside the door. Mm-hmm. So it's going somewhere. So, yeah, that's a whole different, like,
right.
Rant. Let me just.
So we don't have enough time for that.
Yeah.
Doing a segue, I did see For All the Women.
Oh, thank you.
Last week, yes.
Oh,
and I want to know, you know, without spoilers, I guess, for listeners in case they go see it, but like, what from that script jumped out to you?
Well, you know what? Like, low-key everything. I remember I was visiting my mom when I read the script, and, you know, at the center of the story is this, let's just say, a too hard-working
Maybe a Capricorn.
Woman. Okay. Maybe a cat.
Right.
Or a Virgo.
True.
But like a very hardworking black woman who has separated herself from her ancestors and culture in order to succeed and survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I identified with that very deeply. And, you know, thematically, the piece was dealing with black female survival, black female mental health, and black female physical health with regards to childlessness, cancer, mental illness, medication, these things that are not spoken about.
Right.
These are things are not spoken about, and it costs women their lives.
Mm. Mm.
And so that spoke loudly to me. Like, racial bias in medicine is literally putting black women in their graves early. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about it. And so I saw a piece of theater that was trying to kind of address that. And also trying to address, like, the effects of just cutting yourself off from home.
Uh-huh.
Like, what happens when you cut yourself off from your tribe?
Right.
From your roots, whatever that may be, from your community. And that kind of wayward lost. She's so lost in this way.
Yeah.
That's what kind of spoke to me.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you first meet Zawe?
It was funny because the artistic director sent the script to me first.
Oh, okay.
That's usually how I do it.
Gotcha.
I mean, again, like, I'm really looking for how I feel when I'm reading something.
Versus like a person-to-person connection at first. Gotta be about the script.
Yeah, because it's a bonus when I meet someone dope like Alicia and Charlie and I'm like, yes, new homegirls, can we kick it, please?
Right.
You know?
House parties.
That's really, yes, yeah. That's a bonus, but it is at the end of the day about the work and not about me but making a new friend necessarily, although I'm like, I'm down. Come to the house party. So I read the script first, and then I sent Sarah my complete thoughts about it.
Okay.
Kind of my a priori responses to it as a woman and black female and all that stuff. And then she connected me with Zawe, and then we started to have a series of conversations.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's been labeled, and even like Soho Rep's reputation is very much like experimental. It is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But watching it, it felt like almost Afrofuturistic in a way.
Oh yeah.
You know, now I'm bringing out my my college terms.
You're definitely coming to the house party.
Right?
Oh my gosh.
Honored, delighted.
Totally is Afrofuturism. You know? And Afrofuturism is something that was coined in the 20s. The Harlem Renaissance folks were thinking about the future and futurism of Africana. And so it's like being funky, fresh, and black is like an eternal thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
But
I hear you on that. And the piece is very abstract. And that was interesting to me.
And
it was challenging. And it's good to be challenged.
And hearing you talk about how you look for rhythm and how that drives you in your work, like, I can totally see that. In the differences, and I don't think these are spoilers necessarily for listeners, but like in between the action that took place in the box, we'll say, versus outside of it.
The ladies? Oh my God, I love those ladies.
Yeah. What was it like in the rehearsal room, kind of creating those dynamics or seeing those, you know, organically spring up?
No, it took a lot of work because poetry is hard.
Mm.
Poetry is challenging, and the piece really textually operates on two levels, this kind of weird, interesting contemporary talk,
mm-hmm.
the way we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
And then just straight up poetry.
Right.
Sun is coming up, moon is going down. And like, we have a long tradition of spoken word in the black community. So, and of course we have for colored girls who've considered suicide,
right?
So this is like, it's really interesting that those plays are on at the same time. And for whatever it's worth, you know, For Colored Girls Who've Considered Suicide was made decades ago. And that title completes itself with When the Rainbow Was Enough.
Mm-hmm.
And in For All the Women Who Thought They Were Mad, the rainbow was not enough.
Ooh.
And so I think it's interesting to read those two plays in dialogue with each other.
Yeah.
And to see how young women are thinking and feeling now about issues of suicide and their mental health.
Right.
It excites me. Anyways, but what you said was like dealing with the poetry was hard. We had to like sit in a circle and be like, what does this word mean to you? This is what it means to me. What images do you get?
Wow.
How does it make you feel? How do you hear it over there across the room? Do you get it when she says that? No? Okay. Let's try it like this. Like it was a lot of like, it was like a petri dish, like a science experiment.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That's so interesting.
It was like heavy collaboration, I think, with those actors. And I'm so grateful for them. They're incredible, all of them.
Yeah. I was curious about that, too. I guess when I was reading the artistic statement and the collaborative making of it all, because a lot of your work, as we said, is centered around blackness and womanhood and both. But like there is one white guy in the cast. Yeah, I was shout out to white guy.
Shout out to Gibson.
Gibson. But I'm curious, like, do you feel a dynamics difference when you have a cast of all black women versus a multicultural cast?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm always looking for good humans. I think being a performer also helps me like spot that, you know, generosity is key. And so, for example, that entire cast, including Gibson, they're so wonderful with each other. We also have like two children in the show. Like, oh my God, the most perfect little girls ever, you know? So like, I was like, this is going to be a hard play that's challenging.
Mm-hmm.
We need a multi-generational cast. I need a cast that's going to be professional and give each other space and also be really respectful around younger actors. And I was lucky enough to find that. But you know, it's not always so kumbaya. Making theater is hard, and there's a lot of different personalities in the business. So it's like I'm usually just trying to myself be more generous as an Aries. That can be hard. Patience and generosity and looking for other performers who also have that.
Right.
Because if you're the one non-black person in a black show, like it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't come in the room and like pollute the room and hijack the room and hijack the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got to look for people who can give and take space in that way.
Totally. There was a line in there that was that was something to the effect of, we need to keep our grief for ourselves.
Yes, it's never let them see you suffer, which I have been told by many of people in my family. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny when it's a predominantly African-American audience, and that line gets a lot of response, mm-hmm. you know, this idea that you keep your pain to yourself. You don't talk about it. You don't go to therapy. Mm-hmm. You don't share it with the non-black world. It can be a sign of strength, but it also can be very entombing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, entombing. Oof. Yeah.
Like, and dangerous, because if you don't talk about what's going on with you, how can you get the help you need if you need it?
Mm-hmm.
If you're always living under the strong woman
right.
trope, which is a very dangerous trope, I think, for black women. You know, the I can do it all, I can have it all, I'm Miss Independent, I'm super strong. Mm. I think also can just be really, really oppressive, because at the end of the day, you're just human. But yeah, I'm very moved by that line too.
And it's interesting to hear that the black audiences are having a reaction to it, mm-hmm. because it struck me in that way. And then also, I don't know, I feel like there's been a conversation about seeing black women suffering on stage lately.
Black pain porn, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that line you could tell that it was a black woman writing the play.
Yeah.
In that moment.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally. For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
No, for sure. But that's when I was grateful. Like, those little moments, I'm like, oh, someone is speaking to me.
Right.
That's exciting. It's right. nice to be spoken to.
Do you think about audience members when you're reading a script in the rehearsal room?
I do, because again, yeah. I like music and I like concerts, and concerts are dope because it's like, boom, for you, uh-huh. you know, mm-hmm. lights and sound and all that stuff for mm-hmm. the spectator. And I tend to think about, like, the event. I'm like, what's thrilling about this event?
Yeah.
You know, life yeah. is short. I like to be thrilled every now and then. I want my audiences to be
yes, Grandma Whitney is going to have so many stories.
Oh, God. Grandma Whitney. Jeez.
Grandma Whitney. So the final two questions of the podcast are as follows. the first one, if you could recommend a piece of black art, whether that's a musical album, a book, y'all, the face she's making right now, she's like, you're going to make me choose. A TV show.
Oh, man.
I know. It's unfair. It's true. If you want to do a top three, we could do a top three.
Okay, let me start with music.
Yay. Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's do like by, yeah,
listen
like that.
Listen to some old Lee Scratch Perry.
Okay.
It's really old dub reggae that okay. has such a interesting vibe. It's so different than what you hear now.
Okay.
Because our music is so digitally like analyzed and chopped and all this stuff is done to it. But go listen to some old dub reggae.
Okay.
I'm here.
That's for
the
it.
First one. oh my God, the music thing, my brain is exploding. I mean, Frank Ocean just dropped something on us.
Okay, Frank Ocean. Okay, yes.
We just I'm down with that. That inspires me a lot. Mm-hmm.
He's a very truthful artist, you
oh
know what
my
I mean?
God, just beautiful, like poetry.
Yeah.
Very theatrical.
See, look, that's the thing though. I want, like, I could see you directing a show.
Oh my God.
That like is a concert, but it's theater. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yo, that's what I'm trying to do.
Yes, I could see that. Frank Ocean, call us.
Listen to Frank Ocean, listen to some Lee Scratch Perry, and then go read some Frantz Fanon, Wretched of the Earth.
Great.
Because homeboy was talking about everything that we're going through a very long time ago mm-hmm. in a really aggressive way. I love the aggression and rage in that text. It's like an intellectual text that's as pissed off as I am. I love it.
That's Aries energy.
Yeah.
I'm here for that. And then the final question, which you're going to not be happy about either.
Okay, I'm ready.
And look, everyone loves you, so I know you have a lot of love to give back. This is simply just a fellow black artist you'd like to give a shout out to. But this is not exclusionary. I know, like, basically.
No, I'm here for
okay,
it.
Okay. Just to lift up, to elevate today.
I want
to
give a shout out to Keeley Gibson.
Keeley Gibson. Okay.
Is one of the most beautiful-minded, kind-hearted, genuine people I've met in New York. And he is on a really amazing journey with his writing. He is trying to write this. He has written this beautiful black fantasia about the NFL. And he's thinking largely, and I really, really just I love being in his presence. I feel like I'm gifted with joy whenever I'm around him or reading his work. So shout out to Keeley. Thank you for being so kind to me over the years.
Yeah, see that community.
Yeah.
You're amazing.
You're amazing.
Like, and I know you're a busy gal about town, so I'm glad we had some time to chat. If folks want to follow your journey, where can they follow you on social media?
Yeah, man. I have a website. It's like whitney-white.com.
It's a cute website.
Oh, my God. Thank you, girl. I have a Twitter. It's like, yes, I'm Whitney White, and Insta, and... yeah, I've got this play up at So Rap, and I've got this other play up with WP and Second Stage, our dear dead drug lord. Come see them.
Yes. Go support Whitney. Thank you so much for being here
Thank
today.
You, girl.
Until next time, y'all.